Friedberg of Niagara Capital, and with me this morning, as usual, is Al Friedberg, the chairman of the Friedberg Mercantile Group and the manager of the Friedberg Global Macro Hedge Fund and the Friedberg Asset Allocation Fund. Good morning, Al. How you doing?
Good morning, David. Fine.
Good. Today's May the 6th. I'm calling in from Cape Breton, where it snowed last night and the skies are gray. What's it like in Toronto?
Beautiful.
Beautiful. I'm glad to hear it. Okay, let's begin by getting an overview of how the global macro and the asset allocation fund are allocated. I think that that's a good place to start today because the quarter was so volatile with that wonderful January that you had, and then a kind of a stagnant February, and then the disappointing March. If we begin there, we'll get a sense when we talk about the ideas, how they play into the portfolio. So would you mind starting there?
Sure. Core positions. Let me maybe start with the asset allocation because it's even more basic. We have a position in fixed income in the it's boons and tips in the asset allocation. We have a position in commodities long, roughly 24% or so. We have a position in stocks long, primarily housing, though now we've been adding a couple of other industries. And that's basically the position, the asset allocation. The global macro has also position in fixed income, and that's only bonds. That position has been reduced slightly in the last week or so. We are now long commodities and have given the commodity manager an order to increase his position. We continue to have a long position, basically unchanged long position in housing and on the long side, and on the short side remain short individual banks and companies in India and also individual companies in Brazil and a couple of other smaller situations. And we still have our credit derivatives position long. I think that's about it.
Those are the core positions. In what way are they different than?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just add one thing.
Sure.
The commodity manager has been given an order to increase his position exposure, but we do have our own long position in gold, which roughly between 45% and 50% of the net asset value of the fund. Yeah. Go ahead.
In what way is the portfolio different today than it was during that very volatile quarter? I know, but for the benefit of listeners, I think they would like to know how both the quantitatively, like how much you're allocated in the various ideas, and qualitatively how the ideas have changed would be of interest.
The changes have been small. Since the first quarter, what we have done is reduce somewhat the foreign exposure on the short side, foreign equity exposure on the short side. We have reduced it somewhat. Also have moved away from an exposure to country indices, for example, the ETF, the emerging market ETF as an example, or the Turkey stock market as an example, and moved it to a more focused position on individual stocks. Okay, so our India position today is made up of maybe 15 different individual situations. We find that a little easier to manage. So, but it's probably been reduced by somewhere around 15% of the total assets of the fund. Okay. Other than that, and also we have reduced since then the short position in crude oil because we have begun to move to the long side of commodities. So that has changed since the first quarter. And as I said, in the last week or so, we have reduced our long position in bonds from what was like something a little bit over 100% of net assets to maybe 75% of net asset value. So the changes haven't been, it really has been sort of tinkering at the margins, but it shrunk a little bit because we felt that the leverage was still a little bit too high. The daily volatility was still a little bit too high, and so we now have come down to a daily volatility level that is, by the way, in line with the average daily volatility we had in the last 6 years, so prior to 2013. So our daily volatility now, we're satisfied that that is proper. It turns out that, of course, U.S. equity volatility is very, very low, and actually the lowest has been in a long, long time. So as a multiple of that, we're still a multiple of that daily volatility, but it is in line with our regular multiple and our daily volatility of the past 6 years.
Well, let's talk about the volatility of the market in general a little bit later in the discussion. But to begin, I have a question that relates to the funds volatility, and it's this: that with the funds volatility having dropped off quite obviously in recent weeks, can the fund make a meaningful comeback?
I'm sorry I cut you off, but you know, I'm so excited to tell you that, you know. We are satisfied that we have cut down on volatility, but not cut down on the potential to make money. We think that they're very focused bets, and I would expect that volatility will increase even at these levels as we start doing better. But they're very concentrated. They're more concentrated than they were before, I must say. They're more concentrated because the portfolio is smaller. The individual bets are more concentrated. So our housing bet is a larger proportion of the total. Our commodity bet is a larger proportion of the total. Our gold bet is a larger proportion of the total. So it's probably the quiet before the storm. We just hope that when the storm comes in our direction. But it is the quiet before the storm. It is quiet now, but enough to make money, I believe. So yes.
Let's speak about volatility in general. I mean, the volatility has shrunk, and I think that in general people have come around to understand that the shrinking volatility has made for a very challenging environment for all macro and all managed futures strategies, because volatility in effect fuels trends. Now, you just said that you think it's a calm before the storm. Scott Billington, who manages the long commodities book of the Global Macro Fund and the Momentum section of the Niagara Discovery Fund, tells me that his own returns are 2 standard deviations below their mean dating back to the 70s. He's a trend follower, so he's particularly sensitive to volatility. He believes that an explosion in volatility is forthcoming also. But he cannot predict when it's going to happen. Like, what is your take? What do you think is happening?
Yeah, I don't think that we can determine when it's going to happen. I think that the Fed action in the last 5 years, keeping interest rates at zero and providing enormous liquidity, has drowned out all market signals. I think that there's very little in the market today that tells us where the risks are. It's flattened everything out, and it's become very difficult. This is one of the reasons why macro players have had such a difficult time, because they thrive on volatility, and they thrive on picking up signals, risk signals. So, yeah, I think that the time will come when the Fed reverts to a more normal procedure, normal operating procedure, when it ends probably this QE, and then it begins to face the inevitable, which is when to raise rates. When that will be, we don't know. But the reason why we are betting, for example, on commodities as a group, is because we feel that that's probably the only way that will force the Fed to change. As we get commodities increasing in price, we'll get some inflationary pressures. We're already getting some slowly through the wage side, which we can talk about later. But we will get it from the commodity side, and I think that's the way that the Fed will change. And when the Fed changes, we'll start seeing the wreckage.
But if we can't predict when it's going to happen, then the obvious question is, can we make money in an environment? Is the environment to blame for these returns? I mean, I sense your frustration, and I think probably many readers of your newsletter sensed your frustration when you wrote in the newsletter, rather in your quarterly report, that the fund made you said that markets would return to a more rational behavior, as though you were saying that markets were not rational, but you were rational. And you know, I don't think that you meant that, but I think that it speaks of a kind of frustration. And are you doomed to continue feeling frustrated because of this low volatility environment, or can we make money in this environment?
Well, first let me say that it was not a very felicitous phrase that I used. I don't think I should have used rational. I think what I really meant to say is markets have become very short-term minded. Turnover has become very rapid and very quick. I recently saw a statistic that shocked me I copied it somewhere. I thought I put it somewhere. That shocked me as far as how turnover has moved. At any rate, markets have become, here it is, I found it in my pocket. At the end of World War II, the average holding period for a stock was 4 years. By 2000, it was 8 months. By 2008, it was 2 months. And by 2011, it was 22 seconds. Okay, I mean, we're talking about overall, right? And probably by now it's even less. So the point is markets have become very short-term, and they're playing a game of musical chairs, and everybody's like, as long as he can pick up the next hour, the next 2 hours, or the next 5 hours, the next 2 days, he's willing to go in there without thinking about the ultimate consequences of certain policies. So that's what I meant. When markets begin to change and start taking a longer look at things, I call that rational, but that, of course, is not necessarily so.
I blame myself for not being a better editor. Forgive me.
Right. But anyway, that's what I meant. Now, can you make money? Yes. I mean, it is frustrating, but you can still make money. What it means is probably that you have to find assets that have not been discovered yet that will benefit from this easy money policy. And also you have to be able to find those assets that are overpriced and that without warning will change. And the problem without warning is because the Fed has not allowed these assessments, risk assessments, to take place. So it is more difficult, I agree, but I think it's still possible.
Well, let's talk about let's talk about the positions specifically, with that question in mind. Can we make a meaningful recovery in the fund? You've got 50% of the NAV exposed to gold, and you still have an exposure to Bunds, although it's a reduced exposure. I'm not sure how large it is at present. Gold is it's bounced off the lows, but it's bounced off the lows despite really frightening political instability in Ukraine, and to be long Bunds in an environment where rising rates look much more likely than falling rates. Doesn't seem to suggest that we have positions that can help us along. What's happening there?
Okay, first of all, the Bunds are in a region that is experiencing now very strong disinflationary pressures. We have deflation actually in Spain and in the periphery. That's what we have. We have deflation in the periphery, not in Germany, but in the periphery, and that's natural, because that is the real devaluation that we're looking for to happen. There, because of the fixed exchange rate, they can only devalue by falling prices. So Generally speaking, Europe is in the Eurozone is in an area where there's practically no inflation, and either the ECB will react to that by making more money available or cheaper rates, or the ECB won't react to it. But our feeling is that probably German rates are going to be at most stable, if not go lower a little bit still. The other thing about the bonds is that they contain a almost free option on any chaos that takes place in Europe if and when that comes. So I'm talking financial chaos. So, however, even having said that, we still reduced the position a little bit. By the way, that was the best position we had the first quarter of the year, where you know that part of the portfolio made us maybe 5 or 6%. We still reduced the position. In the last week, we took advantage of a move to recent new highs. The carry of the position is excellent. You're still making a lot of money. It costs you almost nothing to carry the position. You're still making either 2.5 or so percent. But we cut it down because we think that we are starting to enter a global increase in inflation, and so it's going to be a little harder to swim upstream for the bonds. Their spread to treasuries, for example, have now widened to the highest ever, and it's becoming more difficult to bet on that continuing to do so. So we've lowered that a little bit. We still think that we can make some money there, but not enormous amounts, and we like the call option there. Now, the gold position, I think, will begin to benefit as commodity prices get stronger. The political situation in the Ukraine, for example, was actually a bearish event for gold, believe it or not, because Russia has sold some gold in the past few months. And it may be selling more gold as they need foreign exchange as it gets a little bit more isolated. So I think the market is reacting properly to that. We continue to have problems in India with gold imports. They don't allow them, or they make them very expensive, and so that has had a slightly negative effect on gold nearby. But overall, we think gold will continue to do well and will continue to go higher from here. We've seen the bottom and we'll be going higher. And I even think that there's a fair chance that sometime this year we'll see a new high if we get some financial problems, getting a little bit more dramatic. But the U.S. dollar is weak. The U.S. dollar is making almost new lows now. New multi-year lows about to be making, and that's generally bullish for gold, and that's generally bullish for commodities. And the Fed, of course, is providing too much liquidity, so that is continued to be good for gold. So those two positions I've talked about, housing hasn't been yet discovered, the market hasn't gotten excited enough about housing. There's enough talk. There's a lot of talk about the fact that people marry later, and that the demand for housing is less than what it used to be. Household formation is lower than it used to be, and all that is true. All that is true.
And affordability also
affordability,
now.
All that is true. All that is true. On the other hand, this. A fact that there's been very little built in the last 5 years, and that we have absorbed now almost all the overhang, a huge overhang in the market of foreclosures. So that's almost out of the way, and we are finding that the builders are making money. They're making very good money, and their margins are good. So the next phase is about to come, and that's the phase where people begin to buy them. Or buy houses because they can buy it and make money. It's sort of like almost like an investment, and that's about to come, we think. So that should do very well, especially if the Fed continues to do what it does now, which is it's still providing too much liquidity, and even when it ends the QE, when tapering comes to an end and there's no more QE, the Fed is likely to maintain Fed funds lower than it should for some time. So we're still in for a lower than needed interest rate policy for maybe a year. And if it's a year, I think that's going to do well for our position. And as I said before, commodities are picking up. We are seeing bids. We're seeing many commodities starting to shake off the lethargy. Some interesting moves we have had for specific reasons. But the fact of the matter is that, I mean, you know, you've had export bans on nickel, and the price of nickel has gone up sharply. You've had problems in many different areas and commodities, and that's what I call resource nationalism, and that's affecting the supply side. You've had weather problems, and that has affected coffee, and it's affected wheat. So we think that the supply side is now looking favorable to our to higher prices, and with money supply still increasing around the world, that should do well. By the way, commodity prices have done well in the past few weeks, even as China has weakened, which tells me that that the market is technically in a good position to continue to advance.
So is this commodity bet then a call on inflation coupled with a fundamental view of commodities of resource commodities?
It's a bet on commodity inflation. It's more than just the normal CPI. It's more than just the consumer price inflation. It is sort of almost like sectoral. We think that that's a sector that has been hurt a great deal, that capacity has been hurt, that is becoming very costly to produce in many areas, and all kinds of environmental problems. For example, in Europe, it's almost impossible to work shale gas, right? I mean, these are the kinds of things that that affect supply, and they will continue to affect supply for years to come, and therefore commodities as a group, as a very specific group, are well placed to rise in price.
Now, historically, commodities and housing too are harbingers of inflation. Despite the ongoing tapering, the Fed the Fed's balance sheet is now north of $4 trillion. People have been calling for inflation as a result of this expansion now for 4 years. And in a way, what's happened has been it's proven that when everybody sees things in one particular way, you could bet against it. Are you assuming that that the expansion of the balance sheet ultimately is going to translate into inflation, or what's your view there?
Well, the problem has been that the assumption was that as the Fed's balance sheet expanded, it allowed banks to build a very large amount of excess reserves, and they would put to work the excess reserves so that you would have an expansion of money supply. We haven't had that. So even though the Fed's balance sheet has expanded to $4 trillion, so far we have had no problem in that. That has not translated into an increase in money supply. There are many reasons for that, or there are many speculative reasons for that. I mean, one of the reasons may be regulatory, maybe that the banks are constrained to expand their assets. Another one may be that they're constrained by regulation. Some of them may be constrained by capital, Basel rules that have changed, and other kinds of ratios that are imposed on them, like leverage ratios. So it's possible that the banks are in a different environment. It's difficult for them to expand money. It's difficult for them to expand their own balance sheets, even though they have a lot of excess reserves. So a lot of the U.S. money supply, by the way, is in the hands of it's produced. It's the counterpart of the balance sheet of five major banks. They may, I don't remember the numbers, but I think that their deposits represent more than 50% of money supply. It's just five banks, and these five banks are constantly running into trouble. Bank of America just had trouble. Morgan had trouble. These banks are being fined. They're being overregulated. Will money? Now the question is: will money supply expand? Inevitably, it will. Inevitably, will. Even if it's only the 30% of banks in the United States that are not overregulated and that are not having any capital problems, they will expand their balance sheets, and there will be intermediaries that will do that. So, we do think that sooner or later, that mass of money, that huge mass of money that was created by the Fed, will be put to use, and that will be difficult to rein in. It will be very difficult to shrink that. It will be extremely difficult to shrink that, and I hate to think of what will happen, because you either raise reserve requirements, which is something that the Fed hasn't done for a long time, but it's an extremely dramatic move, or you end up paying very quickly higher rates on balances, and so rates go up very quickly. Either way, it's going to be a mess going out of this. But the reason why, coming back to your question, the reason why the forecast that the Fed's expansion of its balance sheet would create inflation did not take place is because it never got translated in monetary terms into a higher money supply. And as I say, it's just a question of time before it does. It will happen.
Okay. If we're in an environment where commodity prices should rise, give a take on the Canadian dollar?
Not really, not a strong take. I think the Canadian dollar will probably be a little bit stronger if commodity prices rise, but I don't really have a strong view.
Do you think that people are referring to the rising to the stock market? Many people see the stock market as a kind of it's referred to as an asset party. Some people think of it as a bubble in the making. It's the Fed's intentions were to raise asset prices to have a feeling of goodwill. Or raise the animal spirits. I think this was the intention. It certainly worked with stocks. It hasn't worked so much. It's worked with house prices. Do you think that this is a bubble? Do you think that this is a party that's ultimately going to end in a bad way?
By the way, it has worked in bonds. It has worked in bonds and has worked very well with low-quality bonds, right? Junk bonds. And it has crushed the spreads.
Right.
Do I think it's a bubble? You know what?
The most drunken party is actually the drunks. I think are hanging out buying Spanish bonds and Greek bonds.
Right. Or U.S. junk bonds. I don't think that the word bubble is overused and misused probably. I think what we have now is a market that is not concerned. That's really the issue. A market that is not concerned about risk. A market that doesn't think that anything at all can pose a risk to more of profits. And a market that is deluded almost by the fact that governments around the world provide as much financing as needed, by the fact that they will provide fiscal support when needed, by statements like Draghi that they'll do anything that's required to make sure that things don't explode. So what we have is markets that do not contain or are much too complacent and do not contain any element of risk there. And will it end badly? Of course, it always does. The main question is when. And for now, the market seems to think that it's not today, it's not tomorrow, and that's all. They don't need to think anything beyond those 2 days. But it will happen.
There are a number of people have sent email questions to me that have a kind of character of, if I could summarize them, are you a perma bear? is this view that you've just expressed of disaster ultimately looming, being long gold, expecting a terrible outcome from the Fed's policies, does this reflect a kind of a bearish view that ultimately overrides all decisions in the fund?
Well, is being long housing being a pyramid bear? I cannot understand that. We are very bullish. We are very bullish on housing. So that's not a pyramid bear. We are very bullish on commodities. That's not a pyramid bear. Are we concerned about the result of policies that have been put in place? Yes, we're very concerned. And, of course, we are pyramid bears there in the sense that we think that government policy has been noxious, really, to the economies, and that they will create problems. And they have done that for the last 30, 40 years. Every time that they have intervened in a big way, a few years later, we've had a catastrophe. You go back to 87, and then you go to 91, 92, and then you go to 94, Mexico, and then the tech blowout of 2001 and the 2008 Great Recession. All of these things have been created by governments. So you got to be a pyramid bear in that sense. You have to be a pyramid bear in the sense that you have to be careful and you have to worry that these poor government policies will create problems. But can you be bullish about things in between? Or you think it's in between anyway. But can you get bullish about certain things? Yes, you can get bullish about certain things too. I think permabear is more like a moniker for permabear on what government can do to global economies. And the answer to that is unequivocally yes. Does that affect our trading and that we don't take any long positions? No, of course not. You know, we've taken long positions in stocks. We have taken long positions in commodities. We have taken long positions in bonds. So I don't think that that's a very meaningful term. I am very nervous and very, very concerned about a government policy. And look, you go to look to what's happened in Europe. Only because governments have promised that they will do anything that needs to be done to make sure that nothing happens with the debt crisis in Europe, you have had these governments now increase for the past 3 years, whereas their debt to GDP ratios had to go down. Instead, they increase, right? I mean, we have had Italy's debt ratio is going to reach 134%. It was 109 or 110 just 4 years ago, right? And it was supposed to go down to, if I remember, to 112% this year. Well, it's 134%. Spain had to go down from mid-70s to under 70%. It's already over 100%. Greece has gone from after chopping all private debt, 58 percentage point debt relief. It's an amazing number. Has gone up to 177% debt to GDP ratio. So the point is, we have not done anything to change or reform the system. We have not really deleveraged. We have just pushed forward everything. And to the extent that we have pushed forward problems, you got to be a pyramid bear. Right? And government policy, by keeping interest rates low, by the way, has made European debt very, very bearable. These countries, like Portugal, Spain, and Italy, are able today to service their debt at a lower cost in terms of their budgetary costs, at a lower cost than 5 years ago, even though their debt has gone up. And that's because we have created artificially low rates for them. Do we worry about it? Of course we have to worry about this. These things don't end well. But right. That doesn't mean that you can't find places where you want to be long.
Speaking of European debt, as we say, it does seem to be the most egregious part if there is an asset bubble, it seems to be the most egregious part of that bubble, or sit right on the lip of it, on the cusp of it. Is there our long position in Bunds is a call on trouble there? Do you still have credit default swaps on?
We still have a very large credit default position. They come due slowly. Sometimes we have rolled them over, sometimes we haven't. Depends on what prices we get. The markets are not very liquid often, and terms are not very favorable sometimes, or at least we keep worrying about counterparty risk. But we still have a large position, and if anything were to happen in the next 6 months, let's say, we should be able to benefit from that.
Al, we try and keep the call to 45 minutes. We're getting close to that. Let me just end on a business note. You're still a large investor in the fund.
I've become a larger investor in the fund because I've bought some units as people sold some units, as clients sold some units. I've bought some more units.
And the team is still intact?
Yes. Amazingly, yes.
Got an experienced, a seasoned crew?
Yes.
Okay. Well, speaking as a partner, your comments.
And by the way, excited by the challenges. Very excited by the challenges.
Right. Good. Okay. Well, look, thanks for your time this morning. As I was about to say, speaking as a partner as well as a member of the risk committee of the fund, your comments this morning have given me comfort, and wish you a good second quarter. Hope that when we speak in June, we have the weather is sunnier in Cape Breton and the NAV is sunnier for the funds.
Yeah. Well, let's be patient. I think it will end up very well. That's not just a hope, but I am quite confident that it will do well. But we need
Great
to
Al.
Be patient.
Great, Al. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
This concludes our call. The call will be an audio transcript will be posted on the Friedberg website and on the Niagara website. Thank you very much for your time.